in fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.
Here come the drums.
C-R-I-M-E-W-A-V. You're rolling with the Crime Wave, the internet's first and only podcast devoted to the crime short story. I'm Seth Harwood, your host, the first name in crime podcast fiction, and I'm ready to bring you this week's story. The Crime Wave is produced by Mystery Dog, Aldo Calcagno, and it is not safe for your minivans. That means it might contain swearing, violence, and all types of shit.
Consider yourselves warned. I
The Devil's in the Details by Craig McDonald. Joey checks his watch, a bit past 10 a.m., just under 2 hours until the deadline. Their Protestant neighbors across the river near Cherry Hill are already in or headed to church. Angelo, Joey's father, says, "Time is getting short. Strip the prick down. Let's stop screwing around and get down to business." Joey's grandfather, Carmine, grimaces, shakes his head, walks to the dark end of Angelo's bike shop's rear garage. He winces and plants his arthritic ass on the hood of Angelo's black Lexus. Angelo recently tacked the garage onto his South Broad Street motorcycle showroom to warehouse his own collection of vintage Harleys. Angelo Grappelli gestures at his stooges and steps back as they go to work on the boy's bloodied, sweat-soaked jeans and t-shirt with scissors and a buck knife. The boy, 2 years younger than Joey, is nearly comatose. His head lolls, bloody rivulets from the corners of his mouth and both nostrils, two black eyes, fractured teeth, a broken nose, and a probable concussion. The boy's tied to a big old white pine work table. The boy, Tommy Russo, is probably slipping into shock. His bare feet are swollen and purple-black, bloodied and bent. For God knows how long, Joey's dad's flunkies have been swinging a bat and a tire iron against the soles of Tommy's feet, pulverizing his ankles. Tommy lettered in track in high school. If John Russo's eldest boy ever leaves this garage alive, pretty unlikely prospect, Joey thinks, he'll never walk normally again. May well lose both legs below the knees. As the boy's clothes are cut away, Tommy comes back around. Joey's father's stooges shear away the boy's underwear. Shivering, Tommy blinks a few times and then stares down at his bare body. His eyes widen when he gets a look at his naked crotch, grows wider when Tommy sees what's left of his legs. Angelo begins dropping tools between the bound remnants of Tommy's feet. The boy goes crazy when he sees the tin snips, wrenches, and blowtorch hit the table. Joey's father nods at thick-necked, 328-pound Dave James. "Davey, here." Angelo flips James's engraved Zippo lighter. He nods at Dave's buck knife. "Start heating that sucker up, Davey. I'm going to take three of this little twerp's fingers. Let's make it the left hand. Need you to cauterize his stumps before he bleeds out." That's it for Tommy. "Aw, man!" Joey's father bellows. He swipes the tools off the table with an arm and jumps back as Tommy loses control of his kidneys and bowels. Joey, in danger of vomiting, is just turning his head away as his father's open palm strikes the side of his head. "Hey, dumbass, go get the friggin' hose, huh? And turn the sucker full up. Gotta wash this prick down before we really go to work on him." Joey's father laughs, says, "At least he's emptied out now. Am I right, Davey?" Dazed, Joey walks crookedly to the side access door of the garage and hangs a sloppy right to the hose cart. Joey hears his grandfather spit and say, "You're lucky this bitch has a pitched floor and center drain." Joey Grappelli can hear his father sneer in the old man's voice. "Luck, Pop? Nah, that's planning. Attention to detail. Paid extra for those floors and drain, you know? Cost of doing business. I spot the angles like you never did, old man." Joey tries to remember the last time when he, his father, and his grandfather shared a task. Probably 12 years ago, during a long-gone July weekend, building a soapbox racer together. Now his father, in most respects, is in charge of the family enterprise. Not the motorcycle shop, which is a vanity project, but the real family business. His grandfather is frail and failing. Joey? Well, he's been called south from Temple University business courses to help recover Joey's kid sister, an apparent hostage of Tommy Russo's father. She was snatched Friday night. It's been a fever dream since. No food, no sleep, no TV or radio. Laura Grappelli is another innocent casualty of the long, bloody siege between the Grappellis and the Russos. He's not sure of all the details, but based on what he's heard, Joey's pretty sure that fat-ass Davey may be responsible for this shitstorm. Two families have divvied up action on everything south of Cherry Hill, New Jersey for more than 40 years. Drugs, prostitution, and, as both families are well-salted with thugs, protection. An informal but inviolable arrangement has sorted itself out. The Russos control incorporated West Falls, New Jersey, everything demonstrably city. The Grappellis get the unincorporated regions, rural, township. The weight in the sticks falls less on the protection side. Can't shake down struggling farmers. So for the Grappellis, it's meth labs, shotgun shack bordellos, and sparse protection money from too few beer drive-thrus, roadhouses, and machine shops. Then, just 2 weeks ago, out there amidst the corn stalks and barley fields, an upscale restaurant launched. The joint is housed in some big old farmhouse converted into a Tony Noshery by some refugee Philly chef. It's a Thai required restaurant, licensed to pour and 4-star reviews from all the local papers. Davey rushed in to do the deal, but he didn't research first. The Ross family, Tony Restaurateurs, had annexed the property, cut a deal with the city to get city water and sewer services. The Grappellis and the person of Davey had just shaken down a Russo holding for $4,000. The wrath and reaction came fast and hard. Joey's kid sister, Lori, snatched while clubbing on South Street. Held with a ransom and a deadline. Terms? Kick back the cash and an extra $10,000 for the trouble. Otherwise, Lori gets gang raped at 11 a.m. Sunday morning. If no deal is struck by noon, a single shot to the back of Lori's head. Joey hands his father the garden hose, feeling his gorge rising again as he surveys the condition of Tommy Russo. A retaliatory snatch aimed at learning where Lori is being held. Davey and his fellow stooge, Richie, grabbed Tommy as he was stepping into Fluid, another South Street snatch. They've been working him over since 1 a.m. to no effect, the kid steadfastly claiming to know nothing. Well, when he was still lucid. Joey believes him. Joey thinks that his grandpa also doubts that young Russo knows anything. It'd be like snatching Joey to get details about Angelo's enterprises. A tragic waste of time. His father appraises Joey, turns down his mouth. You're too soft for this duty, just like your mother's always said. Go check the computer. See what's happening with your sister while we do this thing. Grateful, Joey nods. He takes a last look at Tommy, who's sliding back into unconsciousness. The Russos, and their message left on the Grappelli's answering machine, left a web address. They'd set up a web camera, focused on Lori tied to a chair. It was impossible to deduce where she was being held from the grainy images on Joey's laptop. Too dark, not enough background detail. The Russos had threatened to show Lori's rape online, just 40 minutes from now if they follow through. And the Russos always follow through. When confronted with the Russo threat, Angelo Grappelli's first words, "You telling me the fucking Russos are fucking online?" Taken to task by the elder Grappelli, Joey's father seemed sanguine about the threatened sexual assault. Pop. Paid for 3 abortions, and she's only 16. Paying for fucking Norplants now. Last year it was implants. She ain't no Vestal Virgin. Joey's father is clearly exclusively focused on the noon deadline. As he shuffles out the side door of the garage, he hears his grandfather say, "Joey, Joey, hold up. I'll come with you." March left like a lion 3 days ago. Now it's more like April weather. Gusty winds and drizzling rain bordering on sleet thrash the display windows of his dad's South Philly motorcycle shop. Once they're out of earshot, Joey says, "Davey, this is his fault, idiot."
"Maybe an idiot," Carmine says. "Maybe he did it deliberately. Maybe he wants to precipitate grief and then move in. He's ambitious and not as dumb as he looks and acts. Been warning your father about him for 2 years.
Carmine stumps alongside his grandson, leaning hard on his cane. Claps his grandson on the back with his free hand.
"Joey, Joey, you shouldn't be seeing this. Shouldn't be a part of this."
The boy smiles at his grandfather. "It's what we do. It's what Dad says. It's what he does." The old man shakes his head.
"Isn't what I did. Not like this. And you? You're different. Better than this, Joey. Above this wicked evil shit. I pay for your classes at Temple. I want you to take this family in a different direction. This is all winding down. You know that, don't you? This latest thing with the friggin' annexation back in Jersey. It's going to be that all the time now. Even stuff we, your old man, holds. It's all going to go city in time. It's what they call the fucking urban sprawl. They're going to squeeze us out, just like the coyotes and the deer that still used to roam thick around here when I was your dad's age."
"I hear you, Papa."
"Good. Good, Joey.
Then hear this. I want you to take my car. Go back up the road to school. Try and come up with something. I'll make it clear you were nowhere near here last night and today. Something. Anything. But Lori... Carmine takes a breath, lets it out slowly. I don't think we're going to get her back, Joey. That's my honest instinct. May God forgive me. Your father refuses to pay Johnny Russo, and I know he means it. Your old man is convinced he's going to sweat it out of this poor kid. Where they're keeping your sister, or so he thinks. This boy is like you, just like you. He's outside the ring. He don't know nothing. I know it. Little Tommy back there, he's no hard case, Joey. If he knew anything, he'd have broken down before dumbass in there took the first swings at his feet. You would have too, and I love you for it. This is not going to be your life. I won't let it. Joey says again, but Lori. Carmine says, Joey, even if we get her back this time, there's going to be hell to pay. You've seen the Russo boys' condition in there. You think your old man is going to hand that broken, bloody mess back to John Russo? Ever? Nah. They'll gut him, pour in some of that quickcrete out back there, and dump him into the Delaware. And Tommy's in good condition now compared to what he's going to be in an hour. And if Lori should come back intact first, you think John will let this disparity stand? Think he'll ever forget this thing that's being done right now to his boy? Nah. There's going to be serious retaliation against you, old man. Maybe against me. Even your mom, maybe. You go. Get back up the road. I'll see someone hooks up with you on the other end. Watch your back until we know what's going to happen here. Till we know who's going to be left standing. Joey chews his lip. His grandfather's permission to run is like a gift. So, so tempting. But leave this old man whom he loves? Leave his mom? Leave him to face the wrath of John Russo? He's not so sure he can. And poor slutty Lori. The computer has gone into a sleep cycle. Joey bumps the mouse and squints at the screen as it warms up, lightens up. The chair is empty, tipped over. Loose ropes strewn on the floor. He thinks he might see a shoe laying there just at the edge of the camera's range of vision. This is not good. Joey checks his watch. 10:50 a.m. The assault is supposed to happen online in 10 minutes. We should tell Dad. He squints. That look like blood to you? His grandfather leans in. Hell, I can't tell. I can barely make out the friggin' chair. Carmine shakes his head. Nah. Let's wait to 10 minutes. See if anything happens. Your dad will only send you back here to do the same. If nothing changes at 11:01, we head back out. And honestly, Joey, you want to go back out to that? No. No, I don't. Joey watches the screen for any change. Nothing. Deadline approaching. Second deadline, too. Joey's mom's been out of state visiting a sister. She's due back at noon, 12:30 at the latest. Before all hell broke loose, they'd all agreed to hook up at the shop and then go to dinner at Pagliacci's. Angelo Grappelli was adamant he'd have Lori back home before wife Elizabeth returned. Time passes. Carmine keeps working on grandson Joey. When we get to, say, 11:40, 11:45 a.m., and there's no sign of that kid rolling over, I want you to leave. He hands his grandson the keys to his car. Just get rolling. The tank is full. Stay in the library until someone comes for you. We'll need a password, in case the Russos get there first. Joey thinks about it. It's all hypothetical and over the top, and he doesn't think it'll ever come to this, so he says, how about General Lee? Carmine frowns, his brow furrowing, then smiles. That was the name of that car we built together, right? Named after the Dukes of Hazzard's sweet ride. Haven't thought about that in years, his grandfather says. Okay, General Lee it is. Still no motion on the camera. 1 minute to go until 11 a.m. The important thing, Carmine says, it's for you to be gone before your father kills that boy. Before you can be dragged in to help him dump him in the river. Joey balks. What about you, if I take your car? The old man shakes his head. I'm too old and crippled to be lugging around a corpse. I won't draw that duty. Joey shudders at this. This casual observation about a body dump coming from Papa. The old man catches it, but moves on, pretending he didn't. He holds up a cell phone. I'll call one of my boys from back in the day. Catch a ride with him. Or I'll catch a cab. It's 11:02. No change. Then, just as they're rising, the camera is jiggled. Goes dark. Now, Carmine says. Now, we tell you, old man. And then you hit the road. I'll try and take care of things on this end. We agreed? Yeah? Yes, Papa. They hug hard. The old man pats his grandson's cheek. I'm going to go to hell for ever exposing you to any of this. You and that sister of yours. The carnage is appalling. Angelo and David are both wearing greasy and now blood-stained overalls. Their shoes are sprayed with blood. Music turned up loud to cover the sound of the screams. Davy's pick. Filipino box spring hog. His father jerks his head at the boombox and Davy turns it off. Tommy is mumbling incoherently. His left hand is wrapped in a bloody towel. What looks like a severed something is sticking out from under Davy's bloody, battered wingtip. Tommy's right ear looks like it might be gone, but it's hard to tell, to make out details, with all the blood. Davy says,
"Let's go to work on the nut stack. That'll do the trick."
Tommy groans, mutters something. Joey's just about to tell his father about Lori and the web camera when his father holds up a hand. "Shut up, all of yous." He leans in close. "Tommy, boy, what's that you say?" Angelo leans in closer, his head on side, his ear almost to Tommy's bloodied lips. He makes Tommy repeat it. He checks his watch, 11:12 a.m. "He said Laurel. Isn't that a court back home over off High Meadows?" Joey remembers a girl from school named Laurel, a couple of years behind him maybe, about Tommy's age. A girlfriend maybe? Maybe he was waiting for her at Fluid when the goons fell on him. Carmine shrugs. Davy winks and says,
"I know it. Laurel Court. Fucking cul-de-sac. 4-5 houses tops. We'll just take them all, one at a time. We'll call for reinforcements on the way. Need maybe 4 guys to handle the folks in the other houses. You know. In case the home they're holding her in is the last one we pick, which is always the way, huh? Fucking Murphy's Law."
Gravel and broken pavement crunching. A car coming up the alley. Joey peers through one of the 3 small glass panels studying the closed garage door, says, "It's Mom." The automatic door begins to open. Carmine checks his watch, curses.
"Fuck, she's early."
Angelo bolts to the wall and hits the button to stop the door. He presses a second time, and when the door hits the ground again, he pulls the power cord from the wall, disabling the automatic garage door opener. Joey's father surveys himself, then Davy. They look like butchers. Davy has blood in his hair, on his forehead. "Angelo,
take your grandfather here and get out there now, Joey. Get her back in that car and get her the fuck out of the way. Keep her gone at least 3 hours.
What do I tell her?"
"Fuck should I know? Jesus, think on your feet, huh? Tell your grandfather has a doctor's appointment. Yeah, tell her his car won't start. Yeah, that'll do. Do it. Keep her gone till at least 3 or even 4. Give us time to get Lori back. Dump old Tommy here. Now move your asses, both of yous."
The boy jogs out to meet his mom. She's cursing about the garage door not working. Carmine Grappelli stumps along behind. At least he'll have a little more time with Joey. Time to maybe get someone reliable to drive back to the school with his grandson. Joey pitches his lie, finishing up as Carmine steps up alongside. Elizabeth Grappelli checks her watch and frowns. "What time is your appointment, Pop?" Carmine bites his lip.
"Noon, Liz. We should make it, but we gotta go, and I mean now."
Elizabeth smiles and shakes her head. "Getting forgetful, Pop. And it must be catching." She squeezes Joey's arm, lifts it up, looks at the watch on his wrist. 11:16 a.m. Elizabeth Grappelli splits a fond smile between the old man and her son. "You too. Man, you forgot to reset your watches. You know, 2 this morning? It was a spring time change? Time to set the clocks ahead an hour? Remember the saying, spring ahead, fall back." She frowns as Carmine and Joey exchange horrified glances. Elizabeth presses on. "Sorry, Pop. It's already afternoon. You're too late now." The end.
Thank you for listening to The Crime Wave. I'm your host, Seth Harwood. I hope you'll check out the rest of the stories here on Crime Wave and tell your friends about it. It's the CRIMEWAV. Help pass the word, register at our site so that you can participate in the forums and add comments to the episodes. You can email us with questions or comments at info@crimewave.com. Aldo, the mystery dog, and I will get your email and we'll get back to you right quick. You can also call the K7 line, 206-350-4998, to leave comments or feedback. And if you leave a great message, we'll even play it at the end of a show. So drop a line, hop on the website, visit often, spread the word, and thank you for stopping by The Crime Wave.
In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.